New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today.
This is Johnny Blue Star with Dr. Hugo Rodier on the Integrative Hermetic Health Show, and we are going to be discussing a variety of topics based on new articles that the doctor has surveyed over the past month or so. What are we going to discuss first, doctor?
Well, a very interesting article was featured on the cover issue of the Scientific American Journal. Has different sub-journals, if you will. So the Scientific American Health and Medicine Journal, on last month's cover issue, they highlighted the satisfaction diet. Very clever article. The picture shows a cornucopia passing for the stomach, and it's full of good food. And I found the article very compelling, very good. It has a couple of caveats, but how does it strike you just when you first hear of it, the satisfaction diet?
Well, it actually strikes me as the Rolling Stones song. And I would say that my problem with satisfaction is the satisfaction and the nutrition don't always go hand in hand.
Very good point. Very good point. There's more to it. I agree with you, but let's just unpackage this article. First of all, they define the satisfaction diet as something that psychologically you need to be full. If you're not full and happy about food, you're just going to be reaching for those donuts and making bad decisions, and stress alone will lead you to eat poorly. So they make a very good point. You've got to be satisfied. And then, of course, you know, then you better make good choices, but you're more likely to make good choices if you're satisfied. So it's sort of like what came first, the chicken or the egg, or what's the other way to say it too is pick your evil, you know, pick your poison, right?
So, yes, and there's lots to pick from, isn't there?
Right, so there's a lot of ambiguity here, but so, like I said, let's unpackage it.
Okay.
First of all, they define the diet as 4 servings of whole fruits, 4 servings of whole veggies, 5 servings of high-fiber whole grains, and 4 ounces of lean protein from fish, meat, poultry. So that's it. And so they feel that people will be satisfied and eating fairly well. So what's your first reaction?
Is that per meal or per day?
Per day. The lean protein, 4 ounces, is per meal.
Well, you see, it depends. Okay, I'm going to present a certain idea that I've been working with, which is what I call a food plateau. And what that means is that, like, you can be the same person and find satisfaction in different plateaus, so let's say that I'm on a Twinkie plateau, and I eat just low-grade carbos and high glycemic stuff, and this is all I eat. Well, that's my food plateau, but now I find that I have a heart condition, I have some pre-diabetic issues, I have all these issues, and so I try to go to another diet. Well, that diet has got to be something that I'll eat. If I don't eat it, it won't work. So ultimately, I am able to give up a lot of the sugar, and I still have, I have a certain amount of sort of bad meat protein, but I feel a little better, and I can stick on that situation as long as I don't deviate too much. Because if I deviate too much and I start eating some Twinkies again, I go back into the other plateau. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely, yes. And I'm going to address that because you have to be satisfied psychologically. These Spartan diets that limit calories and eliminate 1 or 2 food groups, et cetera, don't work because of the very point you make. And so there's got to be a happy medium somewhere where you're eating fairly well. And so that keep. In other words, it's like marriage. Okay, I mean, stay with me here.
Yeah.
But if we're not married in a good, intimate relationship, we're going to be making a whole lot of bad decisions, dating this person, that person, and you know what I mean. And so being in a good relationship keeps you from other choices that might not have been as healthy. And so the point being, you've got to be content with your lifestyle, or you start reaching for other lifestyles that are not as healthy.
What I found is that I'm on three plateaus. One of them is really eating almost anything, which we talked about. The other one is more or less not that much sugar, but protein and a lot of fruit and some vegetables. But then the one that seems to work the best for me is the one that I have very hard time with, which is where there's an abundance of vegetables, there's a little bit of fruit, there's a little bit of meat, and there's a little bit of high glycemic stuff thrown in. And I just went out on vacation, and it was my birthday, and they celebrated, and I had food all the time. All this food was sort of on the second plateau. It doesn't make me well. So my goal is to eat on that. It's really sort of the Dr. Rodier diet, you might say. I think that the diet that I prefer is probably one that's pretty similar to what you like.
Yes, absolutely. So the point I think we're both trying to make is that there's got to be a point where you're happy, even though there might be an occasional indiscretion. And so, because diet is so psychological, there's a lot of input from the gut to the brain to the satiety center. We have a satiety center in the hypothalamus, which is pretty much at the mercy of what our gut bacteria wants to eat. So if you get your gut bacteria used to bad foods, they're going to send messages to the hypothalamus to where you will not be satisfied unless you get those bad foods full of sugar. And so the psychological aspect of dieting, as much as we want to be strong and we want to make good decisions, is influenced by things that might not be under our immediate control. Of course, we can change our gut bacteria and its messages by starving out the bad guys or doing some programs to readjust your microbiome to where the healthy craving bacteria, health food craving bacteria, regain the upper hand, if you will. So having established that, there's another caveat to this diet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's too much fruit and grains for diabetics. And so if you're diabetic, I don't think this is a diet for you. And number two, meat diets. Well, you just heard the pronouncement by the United Nations last week, right, Johnny?
No, I didn't hear that.
Well, it turns out they've made it official. We've known this for decades, but meat eating is not environmentally sustainable. If we keep eating meat, we're going to destroy the planet. I mean, there are other factors, of course, to our environment.
Are you talking about the methane type of thing?
That too, but there's more to it, and the United Nations report highlights it again. Did you know that for all the resources that you need to raise enough meat to feed one person, if you switch all those resources that you use to grow meat for one person, you could feed 70 people.
Really?
Exactly. We've known this for quite a while. Again, I like to keep saying that because, you know, people need to listen. And so this meat eating thing we've got going, and Americans are pretty good at it, they don't realize that we're contributing to the destruction of the planet. And so, yeah, it goes beyond methane. So this diet, the satisfaction diet, I still like it because of what you said at the very beginning. It's a bit of a compromise, but I'd rather you were full with the foods we talked about, 4 servings of whole fruits, 4 servings of whole veggies, 5 servings of high fiber whole grains, and 4 ounces of lean protein per meal. Yeah, it's not perfect, but you know what? It keeps you satisfied. It keeps you from reaching for the donuts. It keeps you from reaching for the pies and the refined foods and the processed foods and the soda pop and all those things that are a lot worse. So in my mind, it's a bit of a compromise, but it's a lot worse.
Well, let's go into another level, which is beyond the compromise. This is what I found, and this is what I believe right now. Yes, I can go into the diet that I told you about, which is more vegetables than fruit and a certain amount of meat, but not too much. And, you know, a little bit of high glycemic carbs here and there, but not much. But in order to do that, You have to change your culinary art form. You have to get into a different kind of cooking and preparing food. Because the normal restaurant, even really good restaurants that are pretty healthy, really don't have that kind of availability in my, as far as I can see. So you have to actually become very interested in creating delicious food, considering that you have your palate is restricted.
Yes, I think that that's what most people see as a hindrance to eating real well. But let me tell you how I cope. As you and I have talked on integrative health and hermetic health, we need to find balance. And so I cringe when I see a whole lot of purists come into my clinic. They tend to be very unbalanced and not very happy people, with all due respect. And who's to say that my balance, my happy medium is the happy medium? We all have a happy medium according to our environments and relationships and upbringing. But here's my happy medium that requires hardly any cooking and no fuzzing at restaurants. Every weekend, I steam up a whole lot of veggies. Every veggie I can find as organic as possible. So I have a huge pot full of steamed veggies ready to eat in the refrigerator. It will last me a week. So every day, I scoop out veggies from that pot. I add fresh kale, fresh mushrooms that are sitting right by it, with tofu, steamed potatoes as well. And I mix it all up. I heat it up real well. I also throw in quinoa. I have another pot with quinoa. And in 5 minutes, I throw in some condiments. I have the most amazing, filling, satisfying, healthy diet in 5 minutes. And so some people might call it boring. It's not to me, because it tastes so good. I'm used to it. And then when I go to a restaurant, I always order a salad, add fish or chicken, end of story, period. Every restaurant in America has a salad, chicken, and fish, even Chuck-O-Rama. So I'm sorry, I just don't sweat it at all. Is it perfect? Is it the thing to do for the purist? Probably not. I don't care. It's quick, easy, practical. I don't sweat it. And I'm pretty healthy, so knock on wood, I'm 66 with no health problems. And so there you go.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. I think that I would be more elaborate.
Well, that's the balance I'm talking about. You can be more elaborate, but then you start complaining that it's too elaborate, that you're spending too much time. But that's what you got to decide. And a lot of people will agree with you. They want more pizzazz in their diet. Yeah, I get that. I get that. I was raised by a Frenchman who delighted in cooking, spending hours in the kitchen. I thought that was the dumbest thing there was. And then he wanted me to quit school so I could help him in his restaurant. And I wasn't going to do that. So that's my background. You know, I love practicality, simplicity. And occasionally I will enjoy a full meal, you know, like you're talking about. But hey, you cook it, I'll do the dishes.
Look, we're going to take a short break now, and we'll be right back.
This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. The original productions by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix in particular has opened up a new and powerful form of television that has both global income and still unexplored profit potential as convergence between offline and online media continues to blossom. We can help persons needing creative help to turn their ideas for television pilots into actionable, marketable scripts. There's probably nothing more exciting in the field of entertainment than these new vistas online, as that capacity crosses more and more to the big screen. And the opportunities for instantaneous online projections of any type of media in that perennially popular venue. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. Patriots Act is a Brent Marks legal thriller written by Kenneth Eid, a novelist and attorney, often appearing on Threshold Radio. It's about Ahmed, a naturalized U.S. citizen formerly of Iraq, who is sent to Guantanamo Bay detention camp with no real knowledge of a crime he has committed. Brent Marks, a California attorney, is originally hired by Ahmed's wife to fight for his release. The novel opens with a convincing mock execution, a mode of torture meant to break down a prisoner in a brutal and traumatic way that foreshadows Ahmed's actual death in the hands of his accusers.
Ahmed felt the butt of the rifle strike his spine as his knees buckled and he hit the floor.
Move faster, Haji. Up against the wall. Stop there. Good. Listen up. My name is Sergeant Brown. You're here because you refused to cooperate in the interrogations. The decision has been made to execute you by firing squad.
Wait, I'm an American citizen.
Ahmed felt the black bag rip from his head and for the first time faced his aggressors. He found himself facing a man in camouflage fatigues, holding an M16 to his chest. Beside him, an 8-man firing squad with their rifles in ready position.
I have the right to talk to an attorney. This is all a big mistake.
Brown fastened a leather strap around Ahmed's waist, pinning his spine to a wooden post.
Yeah, a big mistake. You should have cooperated when we asked you about your superiors in Al-Qaeda.
I don't know anyone in Al-Qaeda.
Do you have any last statement, Haji?
But
I repeat, do you have any last statement?
I'm not a terrorist. I'm an American citizen. I've a right to a lawyer and a trial. You've denied me these rights. You will answer to God for your crimes.
I think you can see who has all the rights here. Ready? Aim!
The 8 pointed their rifles at Ahmed. Shivering uncontrollably, Ahmed's knees gave way, and he hung on the post like a man crucified.
Fire!
The deafening explosion of the 8 rifles was the last thing Ahmed heard. He felt the bullets hit his flesh, and his body crumpled forward, hanging lifelessly from the post like a scarecrow.
As I mentioned in our last conversation, the word satisfaction to me immediately triggered the Rolling Stones song, which is about the lack of satisfaction in society, like with ad promotions, but also with relationships. The following song, which I'm going to play today, could readily be called Dissatisfaction, but as the lyricist, I called it Desperate Games. The music was composed by Edgar Ahrens and sung by the remarkable Patricia Welch.
Your shadow marks the brazen breeze. I sense you're near and slowly freeze. Tempted by your lips and your touch, the cup of you is way too much. I drink from you
shocks of loss shriek loud.
Hi, Doctor. We're back again discussing, you know, we were talking about the satisfaction diet. And I brought up the idea of food plateaus and that you have the very bad ones. And then you have the satisfaction diet that you brought up from this article, which you're satisfied with will help you if you're on that horrible diet, which is the pure, you know, standard American diet, I guess. And then I brought up, well, for me, that's not really good enough. I actually conform more or less to the Hugo Rodier diet, except that I wouldn't eat the way you're eating because it's just too plain for me. And that's a real problem.
You should come and eat at my house one of these days, because after the condiments I add, you wouldn't be saying it's plain, I assure you.
Oh, okay. I didn't mean to insult you, but it is sort of like a one-meal type of diet, isn't it?
Yeah, I vary what I add to it. You know, I mentioned quinoa, potatoes, sweet potatoes, mushrooms, tofu. I vary that a little bit, but basically I'm getting like 80% veggies right there.
I see. Have you ever seen a show called Chef's Table?
No.
On Netflix? Actually, before I get into that, I saw this movie called Chef. Dustin Hoffman is one of the people in it. I don't think you've seen it, right?
No.
Well, Chef is about a really sophisticated chef who Dustin Hoffman, who's his boss, kind of tries to control him. And eventually he bursts out of that and he develops his own business, which is in a food truck.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, I saw it. Yes.
Tell me if that isn't a great movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. Yep.
Well, for some reason, I caught something from that movie, like a desire to cook a bug. I found another program called Chef's Table. Chef's Table goes into people from all over the world who have the best restaurants, you know, very highly rated restaurants, but sometimes they're into Peruvian herbs, or sometimes they're into 19th century Russian cuisine prior to the the communist takeover. And so they have very different points of view about food, but they're all very passionate and very connected to their career. And I think that everybody is really different, you know. I think everybody has a different point of view about that. I think you probably would consider a lot of this completely unnecessary. And some of these people devote their lives to just learning how to make sushi or something. You see what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I think that you have to take into consideration the psychology of a person to what their true satisfaction plateau would be, which means it's not just satisfying, it's really good for them. Like I think you found yours.
Right. Well, that's what I was saying, that satisfaction means many things to many people. It has to do with the satiety center in the brain and the hypothalamus, which takes marching orders not only from the gut, but from our upbringing, which is what you're reiterating.
Yeah.
It also has to do with that book we talked about, Natural Causes. Mm-hmm. You know, because ultimately, we're all going to die anyway. So we want to have a little fun. That's why I just don't side with fanatics on the other end. You know, these people are happy eating a carrot in a corner all by themselves. You know, and I'm sorry, but that just, I don't see the fun in it.
Well, it ain't me.
So, look, at the risk of giving people throwing sugar addicts a bone, it's not what I intend here with this article that I'm going to quote.
Okay.
So keep your eye on the ball here.
Okay.
An article came out about 25 years ago on The Lancet. I'd have to look it up. But a very intriguing article, and you tell me what you think about it.
Okay.
Turns out that people who eat candy twice a month live longer. What do you make of that?
They have satisfaction that, exactly. they need.
It's a psychological thing. It's not the candy, all right? But, you know, sure as I say this, there are people out there who will do that pretty soon twice a week. They're going to eat candy twice a week, then twice a day, and there we go. So it depends on the set of the sale. Are you an addicting person? And so I say I'm not. So occasionally I'll have M&Ms at a movie. You know, I grew up eating M&Ms at movies. It's hard to let go. Occasionally I have a baguette. You know, I grew up with baguettes. Uh-huh. And I throw in tomatoes and avocados and cheese. And I mean, I'm in heaven doing it. All right. Is it the best for me? No. But hey, it's what we're talking about. We're talking about balance. and everybody finds their own balance. So that's why I voted thumbs up on the satisfaction diet, even though it has caveats, which we now have beaten to the ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got it. I do think that that the two candy bars or whatever, a month or whatever it was, I do think that that is maybe necessary, isn't it? I mean,
for some people, not everyone.
I mean that they have to have candy bars, but they should have some satisfaction in enjoyment of their food.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Food is so social. We've quoted that Rosetto experience. Remember those Italians who didn't eat the best food, but they lived longer than people in adjacent counties in Pennsylvania because they enjoyed food.
Right, and they're, you know, it's a community thing.
Exactly.
And that's true of a lot of different cultures, right?
Exactly. So, you know, these fanatics eating a carrot in a corner all by themselves, I'm sorry, I just don't think in the long run they're going to do as well. As purists to say, might be. But this goes back to the book Natural Causes again. If we understand life and death, if we understand that we can live a life of wisdom and humor and grace, it doesn't matter how we age. It doesn't matter really what we eat as long as we're happy. So, you know, this sounds like a license to eat poorly. It is not. It's a paradox. You know, because the more wisdom, humor, and grace you have, the more you're compelled to do the right thing without disturbing your neighbors, without pushing your agenda onto others. Just be happy with your agenda, which hopefully is a middle-of-the-road agenda, as wisdom calls for.
Yeah. Well, in my case, I've had certain really serious health issues. A long time ago, it was asthma, and I was fixed by very Spartan means. And what was interesting about it is, you know, I couldn't eat sugar for a year, but after that, I could eat anything for a long, long period of time until I got another 20 years later, I got into more problems, different problems.
Well, I just saw a patient last week cured of asthma, and his reaction was quite interesting. He was very happy, but just a tinge of sadness because he was so happy telling people, hey, my asthma's gone, and telling other doctors, other friends, family that he had done it by eating real well. And the looks he got, the poor man, that he was rejected, he was treated like some idiot. And I said, that's disgusting, I said, Eric. And so I got on the computer and I pulled out like a dozen articles saying that asthma can be cured by eating real well because you're changing your microbiome, which is, if not happy, if unbalanced, the microbiome puts out inflammation, and that inflammation goes to the bronchioles. And the bronchioles, where they're inflamed, they go into spasms. That causes the asthma. And so play it back.
No,
asthma treated with anti-inflammatory medications. Wouldn't it be better to address the source of the inflammation, the microbiome, which is totally disturbed because you're eating too much sugar, too many processed foods? And so this is the society we live in when a man doing the right thing gets these looks.
Yeah, that is kind of shameful. You know, I want to just say one thing about that's really strange about my asthma karma is that I got asthma in New York. And during the time I was in New York, I worked with somebody who was probably the most prolific author on nutrition in the world at the time. And he had a health food store. I had a work with him. I actually developed a writing project, a screenplay. I had nothing to do. I would go in his store, but the only thing I got out of his store is I didn't like canned vegetables anymore. But then I got sick. I didn't even talk to him about it. I left for New Orleans and I got really sick. What was really strange is that after I found the way to get well, is I went into a bookstore and I actually found one of his books, and he had that recipe right there, the recipe for curing asthma when I was in New York.
Well, it was probably plant-based, no sugar. You know, of course, I expedite the recovery by working on the microbiome, which at that time we didn't know how to do.
No, no, I've never heard of it at that time at all. It wasn't. I actually, the thing that I worked with was something that was even archaic for then, called the Mucusless Diet by Arnold Errett, who was an old-time natural health writer.
Yeah, well, they were blaming it on the mucus, but the mucus is a result of inflammation. So
yeah, exactly.
Et cetera. But the shameful thing is that we've known about this for over 100 years, because what we're talking about, the microbiome, won the Nobel Prize in 1908.
Really?
Further, since this is a hermetic show, I have to throw in more esoteric stuff.
Of course.
And that's Edgar Cayce, the sleeping American prophet, who in over 10,000 health viewings or consultations while he was asleep, repeatedly would tell patients that it's the gut bacteria that's messed up and all you have to do is heal your gut. He said it to most of his patients.
No Edgar kidding. Cayce,
and he was just reviving what he'd known for centuries, because according to people who follow Edgar Cayce and the likes, we are eternal beings who have lived before.
Mm-hmm.
So Cayce was just rehashing very old knowledge. And that's one of the main tenets of integrative hermetic health, that modern research is only validating what we've known for centuries, if not millennia.
Well, you know, I've been to ARE in Virginia Beach. And here's one of the astounding, to talk about this man, this Edgar Cayce. One of the times he recommended a certain herb. I guess it was an herb. And they called a store, you know, he was in Virginia, and they called a store, maybe it was Chicago or something. And they said, well, okay, do you have this herb? We don't think we have it. And he told them the exact shelf and position of the jar where that herb was. And
yeah, it's too bad that most people don't know about him. And, you know, the Virginia Beach people, I think they're called Association for Research and Enlightenment.
Yeah, ARE, right.
Yeah. I have mixed feelings about him. You know, I really resent the fact that they hide all his recommendations. You have to join up to get them. And you know, when Edgar Cayce went to his grave poor, because he did all this for free.
Uh-huh.
And so for all these people to, instead of publishing it like a good researcher would do, for people to find on their own, like we do all these other great articles, for these people at the ARE to be cashing in on such beautiful knowledge, hardly anybody knows about what we're talking about. I find it reprehensible.
Well, Edgar Cayce, you know, he's still famous, but like you say, it's not like you could go down the street and ask somebody who Edgar Cayce was.
No, he's only famous in esoteric circles.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying it should be available to every Joe Blow out there.
And I think it's interesting to note that the way that Edgar Cayce, this is just of interest, started was that he had some kind of a physical problem, and he went to a hypnotist. And when he was in the hypnotist, he basically gave himself a cure, and they started to try it with other people. And eventually, it started to get into things like reincarnation and Atlantis and a lot of stuff in very great specifics. And this guy, he was just an ordinary fundamentalist, basically.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He was a very staunch fundamentalist Christian, so he had a bit of a crisis of faith.
Yeah.
When he began to tap into all this stuff, but he managed to combine the two, which is another tenet of integrative health, you know, finding the happy medium.
With that happy medium brings up the afterlife too, but we do need to take a break for a minute, and we'll be right back.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.com. www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
If you're not fond of books, you may be interested in watching Dr. Rodier's slide presentation on his website, hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. It lasts 48 minutes and explains the simple roots of all diseases with pictures and graphs that are easy to understand. The presentation includes basic principles of physics, philosophy, anthropology, and history to truly integrate the most vital pillars of human health. Here we are. We're back again. We had a really interesting conversation about Edgar Cayce, the prophet of Virginia Beach, who did remarkable things with individuals in terms of, you know, curing them of all kinds of terrible problems. But he also brought up a lot of things about past civilizations, about reincarnation, about different kinds of healing that are completely off the board today. So I thought maybe we could chat a little bit about past lifetimes.
Well, sure.
Where did you start getting interested in that? Because I've been interested in it a long time myself.
Well, it turns out that the Journal of the American Medical Association had an article on reincarnation. I'm trying to think of the name of the good doctor from Virginia. Of course, you know, you see the connection there.
Yeah. Ian Stevenson.
Exactly. Thank you. That and my readings on esoterica had got me wondering about reincarnation. And so I began to consider the issue. I have to tell you that we have to be very open-minded about this, including our listeners. And we have to start with very common ground. We cannot for sure know. I mean, we have to accept that. That gives us the freedom to conjecture, hypothesize in a respectful environment, because somebody might say, hey, we have no proof. Well, some people will argue there is plenty of proof, but it's all rather subjective and anecdotal. And so that's why I was compelled to read that article by Stevenson, who felt that he was providing plenty of proof. Having right. said that, I began to see that it's pretty logical. If we are eternal spirits, why could we not hang out here, there, or everywhere? Why do we have to be limited to one carnal trip through here and then be done? And so the thing that I began to see, though, that a whole lot of purveyors or sponsors or people who believe in reincarnation were very, very ego-driven. Mm-hmm. And so I began to see the dark side of reincarnation, which is just a big, huge ego trip. Because, you know, I'm a bit of a Buddhist, so I feel that eventually we rejoin that big consciousness up in the sky that some people call God. And so if that is the case, and I'm very convinced that it is, then who cares what kind of personality we've had to get to that point? So struggling with those two opposing views, I read Dr. Weiss from Miami, Florida. Mm-hmm. He wrote like 7 books on reincarnation. And the best one, my favorite one, was Only Love is Real, which I read in 1 hour, and I couldn't stop crying for another hour because it was so touching. And someday we'll have to talk about that book. And so, yes, very conflicted until I read Perfect Balance, Nancy Danison, Answers from the Afterlife. And that is what I think is the best. This was a lawyer, Danison, very ego-driven, as lawyers tend to be, I'm sorry to say. And so this woman had a near-death experience. He came back totally changed, and he began to talk about reincarnation. And here's the bottom line for me and Nancy Danison. Yes, we can go from personality to personality. When we get to the other side, we start to transition away from those personalities and join that consciousness. So before we transition, it cannot be immediate. That transition, it takes a while because we've been so programmed to think of ourselves as Johnny, as Hugo, or whatever else we were before. But pretty soon, through that transition, we begin to see that it didn't matter at all, that we were all playing a gigantic theater play by the strings of the master puppeteer, that great consciousness. And so I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. On one side, I think it's pretty cool and entertaining that we have been this and that throughout eons. But at the same time, it doesn't matter at the end. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. But I think that there is something about at some point in life, in remembering them, because you need to integrate some of that material into your own life to try and improve your life. I don't mean that reflects to everybody, because few people have that problem, but some people do.
Yes. In fact, Dr. Wise made a meal out of that very concept, because he was able to cure a whole lot of people, not only of emotional, mental issues like agoraphobia or you name it, but also physical ailments. And so there is that. So I see your point totally.
Well, I did an interview with a guy named Robert Snow. Did I ever talk to you about that?
No.
Well, this guy was a homicide detective, and he was like on a high level. I mean, he was even at one point like a supervisor of that area. And somebody kind of dared him to do a regression, a hypnotic regression, which he didn't believe in at all. He was like a skeptical cop. Well, what happened was he went into a completely different place. He actually sort of woke up in another lifetime. And he was an artist. And there were certain things that happened to him. He started to investigate it because he just couldn't believe this was possible. And he started to dive into the person's, you know, his paintings and try to find out stuff about him. And, you know, look at the correspondence with what he remembered. Well, it even got stranger than that, because there was one particular painting that he had seen in his reincarnation memory, if I recall the story correctly. And he was in New Orleans. And this painting, they couldn't find this painting. He never could find it until he walked into a gallery in New Orleans, and there it was. And there were a lot of synchronicities with what he saw. And so at the end, he wrote a book on it, which I interviewed him about. But he had absolutely no interest in this stuff at all.
See, I totally agree with what you said. That was the part of what I said. I totally agree with that. Nancy Danison also had no interest in these things. She was a right-wing lawyer, okay? And now she just does consulting for people about past lives and things like that. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. And there are many experiences. And that book, Only Love Is Real, we don't have time to get into it, perhaps some other day. My point is, it's the same point that the book Natural Causes makes, the same point that all philosophers have said, that we must give up the ego at some point. And, you know, there's people hear different things when I say that. The point being is that the final realization is that we're all part of a big consciousness.
That's right. And
so both are true. You see, that's a tension of the opposites that I love to live under. I wrote a book about it. I'm a fence boy. You know, that's the title of the book, but enough about me. The point is that I totally agree with what you said, but there's this caveat that we can get too hung up on this whole thing, just like we do with religions, with churches, with philosophies, mm-hmm. any philosophy, with food. We talk most of the shows about how we can get hung up on food, et cetera, et cetera. And so my warning is that I see a lot of people turning reincarnation into a quasi-church, if you will. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because the idea of this integration is to get closer to that higher point,
right,
that we're talking about. But I just want to digress for a second. I don't know if you know about this one. Do you know about Barbara Carlin, who claims to have been and has some sort of backing for being the reincarnation of Anne Frank?
No, I haven't heard that.
That is one of the most fabulous stories. I've read her book, and she actually wrote a book that's not just about that, because it's about her life today. And to some extent, it was influenced by what happened to Anne Frank, sort of some of the characters, perhaps. But the point is when, as a very little girl, she couldn't really completely accept her parents as being her parents. She thought she was Anne Frank. And her real parents this time around took her there, she knew certain things about the building.
Oh, yeah. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, there are some great interviews about her.
Yeah. No, I totally believe that. My point is, and it's great that she shares that experience, is that it's like a cargo cult. You know how the natives from Pacific Islands thought that, you know, if they built straw men on the run abandoned airstrips after the war, that the supplies would keep coming, you know, as they had through the war. But so there's a, and I would say this for any belief, okay? As good as they can be, they're just hammers. Don't fall in love with a hammer. The hammer is meant to drive a nail. That nail is to really understand who we are. Know thyself. When we do, we stop trying to get our agenda across to other people. This is why I hesitated to do a radio show at the beginning, Johnny, and I still, part of me hesitates. Why? Because we can make a cargo cult out of our followers, the handful of people that might be out there, my mom. So you follow what I'm saying? So
yeah, yes, you can make, it's like making an idol out of things. I mean, you can make an idol out of everything, but actually the spiritual path, for me anyway, it's rather complex. There's a lot of different kind of components, but one of them is to dissolve the what I would call the lower self, the part of you that's separated from that higher power. Because you can experience that higher power on different levels. And you need to get to that point. Because lower point is why our world is in such deep trouble. Because it gives you hate and it gives you greed and lust and all these other imbalances that go with the lower personality.
Exactly. So we're on the same page, you know, and we must reiterate at this point that reincarnation and regression has a lot to do with health. And if people want to get more into the health aspect of our conversation, Dr. Weiss, W-E-I-S-S, a psychiatrist from Florida, I believe is the best person to read. A very, very good man. I heard interviews, and I can tell just by his voice that the man is on a higher plane.
Yeah, I've read some of his stuff, too. It's been a long time. But I just want to say one more thing. What really turned me on was I was really young, I don't know, sixth grade or something, was The Search for Bridie Murphy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Remember that? Yeah, I remember that.
That was probably one of the first times that came center stage in media.
Yes. Do you have time to tell you a personal experience?
Of course.
Well, I remember going to a psychic for the first time and ambivalent, but hey, you know, I'm curious. I like to look at everything. And this psychic starts telling me that in a past life, I was a rich man, so wealthy on the Silk Trail, and kings listened to me because I was so powerful, and I had all kinds of women, which sounded really good, and a lot of power, and all that. And I'm thinking, gosh, this woman doesn't know me from a hole in the ground, and I'm just getting ready to leave, you know, because that's totally opposite to what I am.
Right. Uh-huh.
And so I'm thinking, I'm just practicing working on my getaway speech. And then she says, but you saw right through it. You had a conversion. You gave up all your fortunes and went into a monastery. And they loved you there because you were well educated and you became their scribe. And since then, you have lived in monasteries. You have been a guru. You've lived in libraries, even the one in Cordoba, Spain. You have been a scholar. You have been a doctor, a healer, and never managed to get beat up or burnt to the stake because you walked the middle ground. And my jaw just fell open. I mean, I just walked off the street. She knew nothing about me.
Wow, that is really interesting.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, well, I continue to be impressed by a lot of these things, as long as they don't become an addiction.
Exactly.
Well, we do have to leave this program today, and I hope we can discuss some of these things again. And you have a great week.
You too, Johnny. Thank you.
We'll see you later. Take care.
Last, we must take your leave. We go out with a final farewell, an important message, and a song which in many ways could be called A-plus satisfaction. This is because the satisfaction with the relationship is so perfect in this song that it brings tears to the singer's eyes. It's sung by Patricia Welch, and it might bring tears to your eyes, too. If we all need a good cry once in a while, this kind of cry may be the best kind.
For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. The Coalition is a unique project designed to empower its members both individually and collectively. Besides individual empowerment, its broader focus is on the restoration, protection, and enhancement of citizen and human rights throughout the world through the aid of its members. As this project is centered in the United States, our first task is to create a website and social network infrastructure to promote collective efforts to take back our rightful control as citizens over our government as designed by our founding fathers. Although we must begin with a social network restricted to United States citizens, the organization will also host a global dialogue for the discussion of human rights by citizens of democratic nations throughout the world. If you're interested, please check us out in the GoFundMe.com website, entering in the search field, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment. That is, go to GoFundMe.com and enter in the search field, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment.
I'm too misty and too much in love.